or whether death meant a reunion with God. The question that begged for an answer was, if God existed, then why were there untouchables? When he was a child, Ravi watched his aunts and uncles wither lifelessly on the street corner. He was told that they were going into a deep sleep. Just as when he slept and the world became softer in the darkness, they would sleep. Death was a gift given to them because once dead, they no longer had to fear life. In death, they were free of the terror of children pelting them with stones for entertainment. They no longer had to battle stray animals for food, only to be beaten by humans if they won the fight. Death was freedom. Never should the hand of death be fought. Rather, it should be welcomed as a savior into the home. Yet, he rejected these teachings in the face of Amisha's failing health. Her illness was to be neither celebrated nor welcomed. He would not accept her passing as a gift from above. And he would do whatever it took to save her. Finally, Samir nodded his agreement. Bina herded the children into the rickshaw. Ravi stood back and watched until Amisha's children were safely on their way. Only then did he return to her home. From his place against the wall, Ravi watched the priest fill 30 bowls with ghee and light the cotton wicks. Burning incense sticks, placed in small brass holders, filled the room with smoke. The younger priests rang their handbells while the elders started chanting. They called on the deities as the fires danced in their bowls, creating a haze. Ravi watched, agonizing, as two priests stood over Amisha's head and rang the bells. They chanted louder and louder until they were screaming around her in hopes of driving the demons out. The smoke filled Amisha's weakened lungs, and she began to cough. "Water," she moaned. "Please." Ravi moved to do her bidding when Deepak raised his hand, silently ordering him to stay back. Unable to defy him, Ravi stayed in place. Every time an incense stick burned out, they lit 3 more, depleting the room of all its oxygen. Amisha screamed in agony. They continued, ignoring her cries. On instinct, Ravi stepped forward, desperate to push them away from her. Somehow he had to protect her, to keep her safe. "Step back," Deepak ordered. "There are no demons," Ravi cried, his heart breaking at the sound of her cries. "Please tell them to stop." "Can you heal her?" Deepak demanded. When Ravi stayed silent, Deepak said, "That's what I thought." Ravi turned away, unable to watch. When her screams grew louder, he fled the house. As he tripped over himself in his haste to get away, he remembered the first time she invited him into her home. His head lowered. He gasped, trying to catch his breath. She had made him a part of her life and her children's lives when he had no reason to live. By doing so, she gave him a sense of self-worth for the first time. He picked himself up off the ground and continued his flight faster than before. The tears blinded him, but he kept running, desperate to be as far away as he could. Amisha had given him everything, and now all he could do was run as he saw her stripped and left with nothing. 49. Deepak held the leather whip with the wooden handle. "The temple leaders believe it is our last option. The dark energy has surrounded her, so we must beat it out of her," he said quickly. Ravi stared at a man he no longer recognized. "You choose to beat her?" He made no attempt to hide his anger. "She is weak and helpless." "Do not question me," Deepak shouted. "This is the only way. Otherwise she will die. Is that what you want? It is not what she deserves, Ravi argued, surprised he would find the nerve to do so. But he did not care anymore. If Deepak beat him or released him from his job, he did not care. He would not allow this to be done to her. This, her in this state, is not what I deserve, Deepak said. His words echoed in the still air, mocking them both. The children deserve their mother. What are we to do without her? You have answers. You think this is not right? Then you tell me. What are my options? She will get better, Ravi insisted, though in his heart he didn't believe it. Like I thought, you do not have a solution. Deepak threw the whip at Ravi. It skimmed his torso before falling to the ground near his feet. The clerics will tie her to the beech tree in this garden and perform a ceremony. Then you will use the whip. They said once at night and once in the morning. They have promised it will only be a matter of days. Ravi stared at him in horror. You expect me to do this? Deepak stared out at the water before answering. Who do you think she would prefer to do it? He blinked, and Ravi saw him fight his emotions. She told me once she would trust you with her life. I cannot. Ravi's body shook. Fine. I will hire other men to do it, from the mill. Deepak turned away in disgust. No! He could not allow them to do that to her, to beat her as if she were an animal. I will do it. He held his hand out for the whip. Deepak picked it up off the ground and handed it to him. She will be ready soon. Ravi watched Deepak stare at the woman who bore him 4 children and stood by him before he became a man. In the school garden, the Brahmins used rope to wrap her arms and legs tight against the beech tree, leaving her shoulders and stomach bare. Her head hung forward, her eyes were closed, and her body appeared lifeless. Will you stay? Ravi asked Deepak, his hands shaking as he sweated in the heat. When Deepak shook his head, Ravi bit out with uncharacteristic defiance. Then leave. Let me perform in peace the task you have assigned me. Deepak jerked at his words. They both stared at the woman they loved, the woman who had bettered their lives and now was fighting for hers. With nothing left to say, Deepak walked out of the garden and away from the school. Ravi kneeled before Amisha and placed his hands on her feet in the manner she had forbidden years earlier. Please forgive me, he whispered. His tears fell on her feet and he wiped them off, ashamed he had allowed them to touch her. Slowly, he removed his tunic, baring his back and chest. He picked up the whip, one hand on the handle and the other on the leather. He yanked and snapped the rawhide, ripping into his own hand and drawing blood. With precision, Ravi lifted his other hand and flipped the whip backward, lashing his back. Then he pulled it forward, purposely weakening his momentum and allowing the lash to slice across Amisha's stomach. She cried out, her mind unable to comprehend the source of the piercing pain. He repeated the maneuver, slicing his back until blood dripped from the wounds on his skin. With every lash to his own body, he lessened the sting of flaying her. His skin inflamed and then shriveled in response. With every stroke, she unleashed a blood-curdling scream. Amisha begged her unknown assailant to stop. She pleaded with him to have mercy on her. She was sorry, she howled. She implored his forgiveness, to excuse the behavior that had sentenced her to this punishment. With every plea, Ravi beat himself harder, his face blinded by his tears. Only when there was a pool of his own blood and his hands were numb did he stop. Amisha's face fell, her mind at last plunging her into unconsciousness. Ravi collapsed at her feet, his face pressed against the ground. His body shook in convulsions from anguish.
"I'm sorry," he sobbed. "Srimati, I am so sorry."
He begged for forgiveness for having used the hands she had held in friendship to harm her, for being the one, the companion she had trusted and cared for and made her own, to draw her blood. As that blood mingled with his own in a puddle on the ground, he looked to the heavens for a god with whom he had never spoken and wished his closest friend the gift of death. Amisha had remained tied to the tree for 2 days after Ravi's beating. The clerics had insisted in hopes that the demons would become impatient and move on to afflict someone else. When Deepak ordered him to repeat the performance, Ravi told him,
"I will cut off my hands before doing such a thing again."
"It is the only way," Deepak insisted. "If not you, then I will bring someone else."
"Then bring two, because I will stand in front of her and your person will have to kill me to get to her," Ravi said, refusing to stay quiet.
If nothing else, he owed Amisha a voice when she was unable to speak for herself.
"She has little time left on this earth. Let her pass in peace. She is worthy of that."
Deepak escaped to the mill. When Ravi sent for him a day later, Deepak called the doctor. He checked for a pulse as Amisha hung limply from a tree. She was dead. They prepared the cremation site for her funeral. Ravi helped untie the ropes that bound Amisha's corpse. They laid her gently on the wooden stretcher to transfer her body to the pyre. The mound of wood sat high, and Amisha's body, now dressed in a white sari, was placed on it. Deepak and Samir, as the eldest son, took a burning branch and set her on fire. Those gathered watched as the dancing flames engulfed her body. When there was nothing left of her but ash, Deepak opened the urn and allowed her ashes to fly unencumbered into the air, scattering throughout the land. Some, lighter than others, flew farther and freer, rising above the clouds and beyond the horizon, at last taking Amisha to places of which she had only dreamed.
Jaya. 50. We sit on the porch as the village comes to life under the rays of the early morning sun. Tears course down my face as Ravi finishes telling me the story of Amisha's death.
"What was it?" I whisper.
"Encephalitis from the mosquito that bit her."
Ravi swallows repeatedly as he struggles with his emotions. I fight to keep my own in check.
"The hallucinations are caused by the swelling of the brain."
"A mosquito?" I ask in disbelief.
"If it is any consolation, because your grandmother smashed it to death, no one else was harmed by its poison."
Ravi grips his cane and brings it close. "How did you know about the encephalitis?"
"The disease became an epidemic years later. As more people succumbed, the government took notice."
His voice low, Ravi says,
"The government warned us to stay indoors or stay covered after monsoon season."
He shakes his head, angry.
"The symptoms were the same."
Mom has no idea about this. I grieve for how much was kept from her. She had a right to know the story of the past that cemented her future.
"No," Ravi affirms. Your grandfather rarely spoke of your grandmother afterward.
He clasps his hands together in his lap.
It was our secret, the way we had treated your grandmother in her final days.
Why beat her? And the smoke? I try, but fail to keep the anguish out of my voice.
We live in a different time, Jaya,
Ravi says, but regret and heartbreak are in his voice.
Choices were limited for us. Our country has come a long way in the short time we have been free.
I wish I had known her. I yearn for the grandmother I never knew. I mourn her death and lament how she died.
Your grandmother would be proud of you, Ravi says.
When I meet his gaze, he says,
But I think she must rest in peace, knowing her sacrifice was not in vain. You lived a life filled with possibilities, yes?
But my mother's wasn't, right? I ask. My mother's heartbreak began with her mother's death.
Yes, he says slowly. She almost lost everything after your grandmother died.
Ravi, I start to ask, desperate to know more, but he holds up his hand.
Today, I would ask you for time.
With weathered hands, he wipes the tears off his face.
I didn't believe I could grieve any more for her loss.
Broken, he sighs.
I fear I was wrong.
He pats my shoulder before leaving me on the porch and heading for home. Wound up and restless, I roam the streets of the village. With every step, I wonder if my grandmother and mother walked the same path. I wander toward the outskirts of town. With time, I lose count of where I walk and how many miles. My mother has meditated for as long as I can remember. She always seemed happiest lost in the musings behind her closed eyes. She said she started as a child. Given her love for the discipline, I tried it multiple times over the years. Each time I failed to quiet the thoughts that pervaded my mind. From work to pregnancies to everything in between, my senses were overwhelmed with daily happenings. When I asked her the secret, she said to find peace in that moment, you have to cede control of life. I didn't understand what she meant, but now I wonder if it was the only way she could survive, having lost so much, so young. The revelations of the last few weeks have been overwhelming. I had come to India to escape the twists my life had taken and to find a way to cope with my loss. Now, I find myself unable to comprehend the losses my grandmother and my mother faced. With Amisha's story, I was transported to a foreign world, and yet it was as much a part of my mother's history and mine as the lineage we shared with Amisha. No matter how separate and apart I was from Amisha's time, without this village and its haunted history, I would never have come to be. I find myself at the door of the school. I take the key from where Ravi hides it and unlock the chain bolt. Though Ravi and I have strolled through the uninhabited halls numerous times, now, alone, I see it through different eyes. I enter the garden where I imagine Amisha searching for herself and finding Stephen instead. My grandmother never believed love was her right, or that she would be valued for her writing. Yet I had attained success in both, never having had to make a sacrifice for either. When forced to decide, she refused to walk away from the sons who needed her, but at the same time she made the sacrifice to remain in India, she secured the promise of America for my mother. I grieve for never having known my grandmother. I yearn for the woman with whom I share blood. But the strength that coursed through Amisha's veins has, until now, eluded me. The caregiver's words echo in my head. The story Ravi told me in detail replays until it's all I can hear. I stare at the garden, struggling with how to honor Amisha's memory and uphold the standards she set. I arrive home that evening to see a rickshaw idling in front of the house. Curious, I come closer just as a man steps out after handing the driver payment. When he turns, my breath catches. "Patrick?" I whisper. His face has day-old scruff on it. Wrinkles line his shirt and his jeans. He has a large duffel bag thrown over one shoulder and his computer bag over the other. "What are you doing here?" I take the few steps to bring myself in front of him. I reach out to hug him, but then, unsure, step back. After our conversation, I felt closer to him than before the miscarriages, but given all that has happened between us, I'm still hesitant. "I came to see you." He grabs my hand and pulls me forward until I'm in his arms. They wrap around my waist and hold me tight. In flats, I push myself up on my toes so my head can rest on his shoulder. Want and love envelop me, reminding me of who we used to be. "I hope it's all right," he says into my shoulder. "Yes." I step back and stare at him, still in disbelief. "More than." Hope swirls around me, but I remind myself that our one conversation can't undo years of hurt. I curl my fingers into the palm of my hand, fighting the urge to run them over the bristles on his cheek and down the front of his shirt. "Can we talk? Someplace private?" The edge in his voice betrays his exhaustion and nervousness. "Yes, of course." I motion him toward the house. "Let's go in." He follows me up the stairs and waits until I unlock the door. Inside, he leaves his bags in the foyer and then looks around. "This is your mother's childhood home?" "Yes." I feel a fierce pride at the humble surroundings. It is where my grandmother wrote her stories. I try to see it through his eyes, remembering my own reaction when I first arrived. What seemed small and inconsequential then, I now know is the cradle of the events that shaped my family's destiny. "Where I'm learning who I am," I say quietly. "And who is that?" Patrick asks. He comes to stand next to me. His eyes search mine as he waits for an answer. "Someone who had to put all the pieces of myself together again," I say softly. "I had to learn..." I pause. "I had to learn who I am, who my mother is. No matter what role I play in my life, I needed to be sure of me." He nods his understanding, and I ask, "Why are you here, Patrick?" I need him to tell me the truth, to tell me what's in his heart, if only to help me understand what's in mine. He glances away before meeting my eyes again. "You weren't the only one who lost yourself during the miscarriages. I couldn't breathe," he admits. He runs his hand over his neck before slipping it into the pocket of his jeans. "I wanted to save you. To save us, but it just felt easier to walk away." "Stacy," I say, and he nods. "I thought she would help me forget. I was a fool." He reaches out to touch my cheek, but then, seeming to realize what he's doing, pauses. "You're all I have. All I need." He swallows deeply, and moisture pools in his eyes. "I'm so sorry I left." "What happened?" I ask, still afraid to believe. It wasn't easier without you, he says slowly. It felt like all we had at the end was pain. But when I moved out, I missed everything about you. Your smile, your laughter, your obsession with making sure every word you wrote was perfect. He takes a deep breath. I missed my best friend. I missed my wife. The final bits of darkness fade away with his words. I think about my grandmother and the choice she made in this house between love and her life. It was a choice that no person should ever have to make, but she did it with grace and a heart that always thought of others first. Patrick is the man I have always loved. Even when my heart was broken, it belonged to him. I was sure I had lost him when I lost myself. Now, he's standing in front of me, his arms open and his heart willing. Unbidden, tears pool in my eyes, and happiness settles into my heart. Are those happy tears? With the pad of his thumb, he wipes them away. Yes. After having been adrift for so long, I can't believe I have found him again. I love you, I whisper, feeling lighter than I have in a long time. I always have. Even when I couldn't remember, I did. Sweetheart. His lips find mine, and I open to him, to all the memories, to the laughter, the pain, and the love. I love you. His tears mingle with mine. Desperate to touch him, I lift his top up. He steps back to let me pull his shirt off. I run my hands over his chest. He tries to unhook the button at the base of the back of my neck. I laugh as he struggles to get the unfamiliar clasp undone. You look beautiful, he says, when I reach back to undo it. He runs his hands down over the long, simple cotton shirt like the ones the women in the village wear. I've never seen you in anything like it. Once the clasp is undone, I lift my arms up and he tugs the shirt over my head. We slowly undress, savoring each other. He runs his palms slowly over my abdomen, where I carried our three children for a short time. I cover his hand and rest my forehead against his, mourning with him. His lips meet mine. We were thrown into a storm, and for a while it proved more powerful than both of us. Our sails weren't stronger than the wind's rage, and we nearly drowned in the currents. Just when I was sure the lighthouse couldn't guide me home, I heard my grandmother's story. Her struggles and determination taught me that each day is precious, and love is something to be protected as a priceless treasure that only the fortunate find and keep. He picks me up and carries me to the settee, where in quiet whispers we offer a balm for our wounds and remind each other of our love. When we finally come together, I close my eyes and hold him tight, grateful to have found my husband again. Ravi, 51. For 2 months and 2 days, Deepak searched for a wife. He sent word to the surrounding community that the dowry requirement would be waived. Jenna helped him filter through all the offers from the fathers, but Deepak said no to every one. Frustrated, Jenna threatened to stop helping him.
Amisha is dead, Jenna bit out. The sooner you accept that, the faster the children will have a new mother.
Ravi, who was playing with Lena while Bina cooked, stayed silent. They had taken over raising the children while Deepak searched.
Choose someone, Deepak finally said. It doesn't matter who she is. Just make sure.
He paused, staring at Lena as she hit a spoon against a pot.
Make sure she is willing to love the children.
Janna chose a woman whose family had wealth, but whose heart was cold. Deepak's new bride, Omi, cared little for the children who came with the marriage. She often complained that everywhere she turned, the villagers spoke only of Amisha's thoughtfulness and love for her children.
I am living in the shadow of a Mata, Omi screamed,
months after her marriage.
This family is lucky to have me.
Lena, frightened by the screaming, began to cry.
Be quiet, Omi yelled.
To Omi, Lena was a reflection of the woman who preceded her. When Lena didn't immediately quiet down, Omi slapped her across the face. Lena fell to the ground, wailing in pain. Ravi rushed to her side to comfort the girl.
Do not touch her, Omi yelled,
freezing Ravi in his steps.
If you do, I will beat her more.
Please,
Ravi begged for the child, who couldn't beg for herself.
You plead for the child who killed your Srimati.
What? Ravi couldn't have heard her right.
Killed Srimati?
She was born on the night of Amavasya.
A daughter born on the night of the new moon, when it was fully covered by shadows, brought darkness upon the family. But not Lena. Not the baby girl Amisha had adored.
It is not possible. The child was born under a veil of darkness, and demons killed the mother,
Omi said.
It is fitting someone like you would try to protect her.
Omi knocked Lena into the wall, leaving her crying in fear. That was the beginning of the woman's torment of Lena. Omi beat her for even the smallest infractions, leaving Lena whimpering and shaking in her presence. The boys were older, so they escaped their stepmother through school and outings with other children. But Lena had no escape. Ravi tried repeatedly to stand between the woman and Amisha's child. Twice she beat him instead, but it did not matter. It was two fewer times that Lena was harmed. Desperate, Ravi sought out Deepak at the mill. On a rare night, he was in town.
She is hurting Lena, Ravi said to Deepak,
the first opportunity he had. Since his remarriage, Deepak had begun to spend even more time away from home, sometimes not returning for months.
I beg you to make her stop, Ravi said,
when Deepak barely showed any emotion.
She is Srimati's child.
And the lieutenant's, Deepak said,
shocking Ravi into silence.
He held Ravi's gaze and shook his head.
You knew.
Deepak bit out a broken laugh.
Of course, you kept all of her secrets. Omi found the letters between Amisha and the lieutenant. Love letters.
He ran his hand over his worn eyes. In a broken whisper, he said,
My wife was a cheater, a liar.
No, she...
Ravi struggled for an explanation. He had forgotten about the letters. Even as Amisha was dying, she never mentioned them, and Ravi had assumed they were gone.
She was a good person. The letters meant nothing.
Don't lie to me, Deepak roared. Amisha betrayed me.
His eyes bulged, and his mouth turned down in disgust.
Omi is raising a bastard child. I owe her my gratitude and more.
Lena is just a child. She deserves better, Ravi begged, trying to make him understand. You don't know what it's like to watch her cry.
Then don't watch her.
Anger laced his every word. Deep in thought, he considered Ravi before seeming to make a decision.
Omi has complained often to me about your familiarity in the house. That may have been acceptable to someone like Amisha, but Omi deserves better, he said,
throwing Ravi's words back at him.
What are you saying? Ravi whispered. It is no longer acceptable for you to work in my home.
Deepak began shuffling through the papers on his desk.
Today is your last day. Lina is no longer your problem.
Shocked, Ravi stared at him.
Please, Saab, Ravi begged. I meant no offense. I will do anything. The children are not your concern,
Deepak said, interrupting him.
You are dismissed.
Ravi started to beg him, to plead to allow him one more chance, when Deepak said,
And one more thing. If you ever mention Lina's true parentage to her or anyone else, I will leave her at the orphanage in the city and never look back. I have a reputation to maintain.
He stood up and threw open the door.
Since you are a master at keeping secrets, this one will be easy for you also.
Ravi tried one more time.
The lieutenant, he would take the child. Please, call him.
Deepak shook his head.
The lieutenant died in an accident. Vikram received the news a few weeks back.
Ravi bit back his cry of distress. He remembered Amisha's words that her only solace was that they lived under the same sky. Amisha was sure she would have known of his death. Ravi wondered if somehow the lieutenant knew of hers. But now both of Lina's parents were gone, and she was truly alone. Heartbroken, Ravi could only nod before taking his leave. He found employment as a city worker who picked up the feces left by the wandering animals. As the years passed, he sought Amisha's boys out weekly to get updates on their lives and Lina. With broken voices, they told Ravi that Omi had stopped hitting Lina, but called her the Apashkun, a bad omen. Lina did her best to stay out of the way and made sure not to invite her stepmother's wrath. Deepak was still traveling, but when he was home, he barely spoke to Lina. Distraught, Ravi listened to the news each week. He encouraged the boys to do well in their studies and brought them sweets to celebrate their birthdays and accomplishments. It was easy for Ravi to stay in touch with the boys, but since Lina was given limited freedom, any contact between them was made impossible. Years passed, and Samir and Jay left for England to study on scholarships, against Deepak's wishes. Paresh was getting ready to leave for Australia, also against his father's wishes, when he sought out Ravi.
There are two offers of marriage for Lina, Paresh said.
His features were similar to Deepak's, and his voice sounded like his father's.
One is a boy in another state who comes from a family of seamstresses. Omi wishes her to be sent far away.
When he paused, Ravi asked,
And the other? A boy who's going to America to be a doctor.
Paresh rubbed the back of his neck with his hand.
There haven't been any others.
Omi had spread the word when Lina was young that she was a bad omen. She cautioned the villagers that it was in their best interest to keep their distance from her. She blamed the girl for her mother's death and held regular pujas to help clear the house of her negative energy. She told tales of Lina's odd behavior, though Lina had never been anything but a sweet young girl. Soon enough, the townsfolk believed Omi and, for the safety of their children and family, kept their distance from the girl. It seemed to give Omi pleasure to see her suffering.
She told me she wanted to marry the boy who is to be a doctor, but...
Paresh started and then paused.
But Omi has said no. The dowry is too high, Paresh said. He is highly sought after since he is to be a doctor in America.
Ravi saw Paresh's struggle to do right by his sister.
Lina has been crying. She and the boy have seen each other in passing and like each other.
She begged Papa, but he refused to listen.
I also tried, but without success.
Deepak's increased absence after Amisha's death had created a rift between the boys and their father. His tolerance of Omi's treatment toward Lina had only exacerbated it. Ravi was grateful that the boys still trusted him after all the time that had passed. Samir and Jay had the most memories of Ravi in the household and often talked about how much Amisha valued Ravi's friendship. Paresh, trusting his older brothers, had formed a strong bond with him also.
Papa is to announce the engagement in a few days.
Paresh stared at the village, his thoughts lost amid the crowd.
If Lina is forced to live the rest of her life with the garment boy...
He stopped and swallowed deeply.
She deserves to be happy.
Ravi showered in the public outhouse that he and his family shared with 10 other families. He used the same soap to clean both his body and hair of the filth from work. He dressed quickly in a fresh tunic and pants. Using a broken comb, he pulled the knots from his hair. After slipping his feet into a pair of sandals, he walked toward the mill. As he neared the factory, the memory of his first meeting with Amisha assuaged him.
If you can hear me, Srimati, he whispered, then help me do right by your daughter.
The bell over the door jingled as he entered. The manager was different from the one years ago.
Is Sab here?
Ravi asked. Ravi swiped his sweaty palms on his pants while he waited. When Deepak followed the manager out 5 minutes later, Ravi didn't hide his shock. Deepak's hair had gone gray, and stress lines covered his face. He had lost substantial weight, and his clothes hung off his frail body.
Ravi, Deepak said.
His face held none of the anger it had 15 years before. Instead, it was filled with fatigue.
It has been many years.
He motioned for Ravi to follow him into his office and take a seat in the visitor's chair.
How are you and Bina?
We are well.
Ravi didn't tell him that a day didn't go by where Bina didn't speak of the children she had loved as her own. He took a deep breath for courage before saying,
I heard the wonderful news that Lina's marriage was to be decided.
He had rehearsed each word 100 times in his head.
Paresh told me that his sister wants to marry the boy who is to be a doctor.
You speak to my son, Deepak demanded, but there was no fire in him, just exhaustion.
You told him the story.
No,
Ravi rushed to assure him.
I promise, Sab, I haven't said a word.
He tried to regroup, afraid he had made it worse.
He told me in passing, out of concern for his sister.
The marriage to the doctor is not possible,
Deepak said, seeming to accept his explanation.
Omi thinks the seamster is better.
Amisha wanted her in America,
Ravi said, his voice harsher than he meant.
The night of Lina's birth, you made a promise to Amisha. Do you remember?
From the light of recognition in Deepak's eyes, Ravi knew he did.
Unbeknownst to me, I promised my wife to send another man's child to America,
Deepak said. Anger lit his face and brought the corners of his mouth down.
I was foolish. A child with brown hair, white skin, and green eyes. I believed Amisha when she told me Lina was mine. Why would I think anything else?
Disgusted, he shook his head.
I have no reason to keep the promise. Lina will marry the garment boy.
He stood up, indicating the discussion was over.
He came for her,
Ravi said, desperate. Deepak stopped moving toward the door and stared at Ravi in confusion.
The lieutenant loved her. He wanted her to go to England with him, promised to raise the boys as his. A Hindu woman?
Deepak sagged against the desk.
A member of the Raj?
Yes.
Ravi silently prayed for guidance.
Amisha said no, knowing the child she carried was his,
Ravi said slowly, letting the words sink in.
She still said no.
Why? Deepak begged, his voice torn. If she knew the child was not mine, why deceive me?
Because she loved you, Ravi lied, frantic to help Lena, and she wanted her life to be with you.
Ravi finished with the only words he thought would help.
Srimati could have given birth to her daughter in England, but she trusted you to raise her, to do right by Lena. She stayed in India to be with you, and she paid for her loyalty with her life.
Ravi stood on the outskirts of the small gathering. Omi had refused to spend any more money than necessary on the wedding. She had planned the ceremony in less than 3 days and invited only immediate family. Paresh had invited Ravi to the wedding, but cautioned him that Omi didn't know. Ravi promised to keep his distance. He only wanted to see Amisha's daughter be married. The pujari spoke the words in Hindi that bound Lena to her new husband for lifetimes. He showered them with rose petals and blessed water. The pujari tied the edge of Lena's sari to the groom's garment, then asked the couple to repeat 7 oaths to each other before circling the fire. There was a small round of applause as the ceremony concluded. Ravi closed his eyes, silently wishing his friend were here to witness her daughter's marriage. Lena went first to Paresh, who pulled her in for a tight hug. Paresh kissed the top of his sister's head and wished her well. Because the wedding was so sudden, neither Samir nor Jay was able to make it back in time. Lena then bent down and touched Omi's feet in a sign of respect. Omi only nodded and stepped back, refusing to embrace the stepdaughter she despised. Next, Lena approached Deepak and touched his feet in the same show of respect.
Be happy, he said to the daughter who was not his own. For your birth mother.
Lena's gaze flew to his, and Ravi saw tears pooling in her eyes. She nodded, her movement jerky.
I will, Papa.
She glanced at her husband, who stood silently next to her, before facing her father again.
Thank you, she breathed, for the wedding.
She stared at the man who had raised her. Her chin quivering, she whispered,
for allowing me to marry the man I wanted.
Ravi saw Lena's new husband reach out and briefly clasp her hand in his before releasing it. He smiled at the act that only a generation ago would have been frowned upon. The show of affection and support would have made Amisha's heart sore. Deepak nodded. Ravi saw him struggling with his own emotions. Turning to his new son-in-law, he said,
In America, take care of her. She is yours now.
I will, Papa.
Lena's husband called him father out of respect.
I promise.
With a hand on her back, Lena's husband led her toward the waiting car his family had hired. He opened the door and motioned for Lena to precede him. As she bent her head to get into the car, her eyes met Ravi's across the hood. She paused when she saw the tears coursing down his cheeks, her face clouded with confusion. Raising one hand, Ravi offered Amisha's daughter both congratulations and a goodbye at the same time. Likely having no memory of him, Lena nonetheless raised her hand in return. Her husband said something Ravi couldn't hear. Nodding, Lena broke eye contact with Ravi and moved to get in the car. Her husband followed her in, and seconds later, the car drove away. Ravi watched it until it was no longer in sight. When he started to leave, he caught Deepak watching him. Ravi brought his hands slowly together and, with a bow of his head, thanked him. Not waiting for a response, he turned away and went home, assured that Amisha's wish for her daughter had come to fruition. Jaya 52. The temperature cools, and the shade from the tree chills the air even further. The garden is quiet, as if the animals know something is amiss. The flowers turn inward, and the leaves on the tree hang limp as if in mourning. "My mother was a bad omen," I whisper as Ravi concludes the story. "Her stepmother faulted Mom for Amisha's death?" I choke back a sob. Everything makes sense now. Her insistence about following all the rules, making sure never to take the wrong step. Her torment when I lost the babies. Her refusal to get close to anyone for fear that her energy would hurt them. She was made to believe that anything that went wrong in her life, her mother's, and then mine, was her fault. She thinks she's a curse.
"Yes."
He's drawn and tired. His eyes are vacant as he stares past me.
"Your stepmother warned any man who wanted to marry her that their lives and their children's would be cursed. Your mother was told from the time she was a child until she was married that she was a curse. Deepak never told her differently, so in time she came to believe it."
His shoulders sag.
"And I could not tell her the truth."
As a journalist, I saw and heard the cruelties humans were willing to commit toward one another. We were trained to keep an emotional distance and recite the facts for the readers. I struggled early in my career, but quickly found a rhythm. Soon I was recognized for my ability to tell a story with an objectivity others envied. Now, hearing about my mother's treatment, I cannot stay neutral. Rage rushes over me. If the choice were mine, I would demand her path be changed. But I am helpless to alter her past. Her fortune was to live the life that she refused to reveal to me. Maybe keeping her secret was the only way she learned to accept it. Why did Deepak ask her never to come home?
"I do not know,"
he admits, looking confused by the request.
"It could have been a number of reasons. Omi's insistence, Deepak's fear their reputation would be ruined if the story ever came out."
His voice cracks.
"He never told me about the promise."
"But before his death, he asked for her?" I ask, trying to make sense of my grandfather's actions.
"Maybe before his death, he hoped to right his wrong."
He pauses.
"He loved Amisha. I don't know if he ever fully recovered from her betrayal or her death."
He takes a deep breath.
"Lina became an easy person to blame."
"She has a good life," I say quietly, "with my father. I have seen my mother's demons over my lifetime, but given what her life could have been, I now know how fortunate she is." "You gave her that." I'm about to say more, to tell Ravi how grateful I am that he stepped in and changed the course of my mother's life, when he shakes his head.
"The story is not over."
Ravi holds up a hand.
"I have not told you everything."
He clutches his cane tightly.
"I waited a lifetime to unburden my soul, but now that the time has come, I find I fear the truth."
His eyes meet mine, and I recoil from his fear. I start to ask when he says slowly,
"I lied to her."
"To whom?" I ask, confused.
"He came back."
His words are barely audible as a light wind rustles the trees and causes the flowers to sway in protest. Tears flow unencumbered down his cheeks.
"After Amisha sent him away, the lieutenant came back for her."
"Stephen?" Shocked and confused, I try to make sense of what he's saying. "She told him no."
"She never knew."
His body starts to shake.
3 days before she was bitten by the mosquito, he came to the house for her. She was at the river, and I was home alone. I told him,
Ravi tries to catch his breath.
I begged him to leave. I told him she was happy.
He believed me, and promised never to return.
I don't understand, I whisper,
my heart hurting.
Why would you do that?
If he had seen the baby, he would have known, Ravi says slowly. He would have wanted his daughter with him. Amisha would have had to choose between her boys and the baby.
His sobs mask his words.
I thought I was saving her from heartache. Instead, I sentenced her to death.
He raises his face, and his eyes meet mine.
Because of me, your family faced nothing but heartbreak.
His body shakes with grief.
I am so sorry, he cries. She could still be alive.
Stunned, I stare at the man who has carried the guilt and burden of a lifetime. In broken words, I say slowly,
You didn't know what would happen.
My tears fall freely as I lay my hand over his. My grandmother faced a choice no person ever should, her children or the man she loved.
Her choice was an impossible one. I refuse to criticize the man who lived his entire life with integrity and always supported his friend without judgment. Her death was a tragedy, not a fault.
I bow my head, fighting my own heartbreak. But I cannot blame a man whose only crime was trying to do the right thing. My own miscarriages, coming to India, reuniting with Patrick. All of it has taught me that there is never a guarantee of life's path. For the first time since the story began, I sense a whisper from my grandmother. I stop and listen. Sure, I can hear her voice, encouraging me. From the sway of the beech tree's branches to the bloom of the flowers, I believe Amisha is standing with us. With soft words, she guides me to help him.
You were her friend.
I grip his hand in mine. Amisha loved you and trusted you. It would break her heart to know you blamed yourself. It wasn't your fault. It wasn't my mother's fault.
Amisha's children and Stephen needed her. They loved her and had to live without.
He cups my cheek.
You had to live without a woman who would have loved you unconditionally.
Refusing my forgiveness, he says,
For that, I will do penance for lifetimes.
Ravi stands slowly and leans on his cane as he starts the walk home. I watch him until he's no longer in sight. I spend the rest of the afternoon silently staring at Amisha's garden, replaying every detail of the story in my head. Patrick is spending the day sightseeing to give Ravi and me time to finish the story. When the sun finally sets, I leave my grandmother's haven of flowers. I flag the first rickshaw I see and ask the driver to take me into town. Once there, I enter the cafe's familiar surroundings. After dialing the number, I wait as it rings across continents.
Hello?
My mom's voice is gravelly from sleep. It's the middle of the night there.
Mom,
I say, and then pause. In time, I'll share the story with her of her parentage and the circumstances surrounding it. But for now, I need to tell her how I feel.
I love you,
I whisper.
Jaya,
she says, suddenly alert. I can hear her sitting up in bed, and my father next to her asking if everything is okay.
Betty,
I'm so grateful for you, for everything you've given me,
I say, tears clogging my throat. Fate passed its judgment and sentenced my mother at birth. She was destined to live a life without the presence or guidance of a mother.